Good evening. It is just a little after 6 p.m. That was the Beatles. First tune you heard was Money, as we closed out of the last show. Money, That's All I Want. And then You Really Got a Hold on Me from, of course, the Beatles anthology. You are listening to WEFT Champagne 90.1 FM radio. My name is Ben. This is the program where we are at. I am live in the studio. It has been a hot day. Quite a few hot. Sorry, you're having a little technical issues here in the studio. Try to get my audio fixed. It is August 18th, Monday, just a few hours, 6:02 p.m. But just wanted to get a quick look at the weather, since, as I said, we actually did have a heat advisory, I think, since been going on for last night, as its temperatures have gotten 95. I don't know if they broke 100. I'm sure it felt like 100 for many people who are outside today and during the afternoon. We are, according to our forecast, it is expected rain and heavy scattered thunderstorms are expected tonight. If I can get around 10, 11 p.m., roughly 10, 11 up till midnight, supposedly a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Going into possibly tomorrow morning, as you get up ready for classes or work. And let's see, in terms of the rest of the week, Tuesday, the high, tomorrow, 88 is the high, 83 for Wednesday, 81 for Thursday, 83 for Friday. Hopefully we won't get two more of the high 90, 95 degrees, but let's get some house cleaning and stuff, WFT house cleaning programming out of the way. So that's what you're going to hear now.
Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Elliott Counseling Group, who offers compassionate mental health care to individuals of all ages. Elliott Counseling Group serves Central Illinois with in-person and online sessions. More information is available at ElliottCounselingGroup.com. That's E-L-L-I-O-T-T, Counseling Group, no punctuation or spaces, .com, or by phone at 217-398-9066.
Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Minuteman Press. Whether you need signs for an event, thousands of full-color flyers, or personalized promotional items, Minuteman Press can make it happen in time and on budget. They offer an extensive line of products as well as design services. Minuteman Press may be reached online at cuprinting.com, by calling 217-355-0500, or in person at their new location in the Shops of Knollwood Shopping Center at 2131 South Neal Street.
And just let you know, by the way, my name is Ben. This is that's currently, you know, now back in here in the studio, live studio. Just a reminder that here on WEFT 90.1 FM, in this program that I'm doing, that you're listening to right now, where we are at, that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. And again, in case if you didn't know, as I've we've mentioned, WEFT, we have a whole new way to listen to WEFT. You can listen to obviously you can listen to us online on our website at weft.org, stream online 24/7. But we also have the WEFT app, which you can download on Apple and Android. And go to Google Play Store or the Apple Store, Yeah, it's just the Apple, like online, not at an actual Apple store product thing. but you can listen to the WFT live audio stream on our new WEFT app. It's a whole new way to WFT. You can also leave comments. You can look at find out all of our music shows, all of our public affairs shows. You can also leave feedback, I believe. And it's a whole, as we say, it's a whole new way to WFT. As we come up, I believe, isn't our, well, I think we're about a month away from celebrating WFT's anniversary. So just some other house cleaning, other things that we like to let people know about. Do you have an old car, truck, motorcycle, or boat that you would like to get rid of? You can donate any old vehicle to Charitable Adult Rides and Services and designate WEFT. You can designate WEFT to receive the proceeds from your gift. All you need is a clear title. Charitable Adult Rides and Services will pick it up and haul it away with no charge to you. You can make arrangements on the website at careasy.com or call 855-500-RIDE. That's 855-500-7433. Remember to tell them that you want WFT to receive the proceeds. And of course, some program organization that I like to let people know about is the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission, which is a people-focused agency made up of 100 programs designed to generate possibilities for within our community. Their website is ccrpc.org. They have something called the Summer Cooling Program, which, you know, given how hot it's been, you know, this summer, summer cooling program where they, I believe they offer assistance with anyone with their energy bill in terms of like air conditioning. The RPC provides power bill assistance households at most power bill assistance at Champaign County households with most risk from extreme summer heat. They do have an eligibility criteria for the summer cooling program, which of course means you must be a Champaign County resident. Your household's power service is disconnected or in immediate disconnect status. Your household's most recent 30-day income must be at or below the 200% of the federal poverty level, and such and such. All those information, again, can be found at ccrpc.org. The summer cooling program, you would go to divisions, community services, and then summer cooling program. As I said, they have a number of programs. They have homeless prevention, rent assistance, homeless services, sleep, which is safety, lighting, energy efficiency program, senior services, transportation assistance, youth assessment center, LIHEAP, low income home energy assistance. Although I don't believe that that starts until October. HUD, housing counseling services, and a number of scholarships and other tools and very useful information and resources. Again, ccrpc.org is the website for Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. And I'll just, again, put out their phone number. I believe their normal hours of operation Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Their phone number, 217-328-3313. I think that's it. I'll just again, maybe one last thing before I go to our newest program that I have prepared. There is the Rose Bowl Tavern. They always have shows, music trivia night. I believe trivia night is usually on Wednesday around 7:30. Maybe get there a little bit early if you would like. But that's at the Rose Bowl. You can, if you want to know what's going on at the Rose Bowl, go to their website, www.rosebowltavern.com. So I have my news program, pre-recorded news program ready to play for you all. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of a speaker, not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. I believe this is breakthrough news that I have prepared for you. So that is what you are about to hear for the most, all the way up until the until we have a close out for the rest of the hour. So this is breakthrough news.
Breakthrough.
Welcome to Breakthrough Radio, the best of breakthrough news brought to you for 1 hour each week. I'm Sean Blackman. Now to our first story.
Breakthrough News is being attacked nonstop by what appears to be a CIA, Mossad, deep state, whatever you want to call it, front organization. For the past year, we've been harassed and slandered by a group called the Network Contagion Research Institute, or NCRI. Their hit pieces have been cited by a bunch of news outlets as if they were unbiased reports, and also by congressional committees and pro-Israel politicians trying to shut down the Palestine Solidarity Movement and attack the U.S. left. In addition to Breakthrough, they've attacked some of the main groups driving Palestine solidarity activism: the Palestinian Youth Movement, Code Pink, Answer Coalition, the People's Forum, National Students for Justice in Palestine, Al-Auda, and the whole Shut It Down for Palestine movement as part of one giant evil ecosystem. The NCRI presents itself as an independent research institute tracking cyber social threats in partnerships with universities. Sounds pretty harmless, right? How could you be against anyone that's fighting cyber social threats? But we looked into the NCRI, and it's being run out of a place with lots of CIA connections by people who are clearly taking money from Israel. Most of NCRI's reports focus on two topics: China and Israel. Regarding China, they basically put forward the idea that China is spreading pro-China propaganda in the U.S. and that it's using TikTok to influence young Americans on a variety of issues ranging from the Middle East to the trade war. On Israel, their goal is basically to portray the Palestine movement as an anti-Semitic movement that's secretly backed by terrorists, China, or both. So in many ways, their goal is to tie the U.S. Cold War against China to Palestine by saying that China is responsible for pro-Palestine sentiment in America. I won't get into the methodology of these studies because that could probably be its own video, but I want to talk about who's behind the NCRI. The NCRI was founded in 2018 by a guy named Joel Finkelstein. Joel Finkelstein was a neurologist who studied the brains of rats, but claimed that his studies also gave him insights into humans. He founded the NCRI alongside a guy named Adam Sohn, a businessman. Both of them are big supporters of Israel, especially Finkelstein. The NCRI is based out of Rutgers University's Center for Critical Intelligence Studies, which has long been regarded as a front for the CIA. During the Cold War, the CIA conducted mind control experiments on Hungarian immigrants at Rutgers as part of its infamous MKUltra mind control program. The CIA also funded research at Rutgers and even stole research from students to use against the Soviet Union. The CIA and other government agencies still openly recruit out of Rutgers University. A quick look at the job listings on the Center for Critical Intelligence Studies website shows a litany of jobs for weapons manufacturers and the U.S. national security state. CCIS also receives grants from the Defense Intelligence Agency and has classes taught by FBI and CIA agents. But today, it's also very common for non-governmental organizations to do the work of the national security state because it's less suspicious than operating directly through U.S. federal agencies, which have developed a reputation for subterfuge. NCRI advises the Department of Homeland Security on how to identify threats, and its research is often used and cited by government law enforcement agencies. Its most widely cited study was one alleging that TikTok was controlled by the Chinese government and was widely cited as the intellectual basis for the attempt to ban TikTok in the United States, which, if we remember, was also heavily being pushed by the Israel lobby. NCRI also has clear ties to Israel. NCRI's founder, Joel Finkelstein, was a fellow at the Anti-Defamation League, the central institution for equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism in the United States. A cursory look at the reports NCRI has written shows their obsession with the idea that the pro-Palestine movement is a front for terrorism. Here's a report accusing a Palestinian professor of being a pipeline for foreign terrorism. Here's another report accusing a charity for Palestinian children of being a front for terrorism. Here's a report accusing us of being not only pro-Hamas, but also of being funded by China. The lead researcher on this paper, Alex Goldenberg, retweets blatant Israeli propaganda like posts from the Israeli-backed American-manned sham aid organization, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which itself cites NCRI as a source. Goldenberg also happens to be the director of national intelligence at Narivance, a shadowy company owned by the other NCRI founder, Adam Sohn. The fact that there's all this crossover in personnel between the nonprofit research institute and the for-profit cyber intelligence firm makes it likely that it's one operation, which uses the private company for their security contracts and the nonprofit side for the innocuous-looking partnerships they don't mind disclosing. The NCRI's accusation that we're funded by China is, of course, a total lie. But let's look at who's funding the NCRI. In 2022, the NCRI got almost a fifth of its funding from the Israel on Campus Coalition. The Israel on Campus Coalition operates in the United States, but secretly takes its directions from the Israeli Ministry of Strategic Affairs, as shown in an Al Jazeera documentary called The Lobby USA. Al Jazeera actually came under such heavy attacks from the Israel lobby that they chose not to air this documentary, but you can still watch it on the Electronic Intifada's YouTube channel. NCRI also receives donations through another group in Israel called Hetz for Israel. They have an incredibly vague mission statement that says, quote, "We initiate tailor-made activities through a global network of world leaders, policymakers, opinion leaders, and changemakers to positively impact Israel's national security." But if you listen to their CEO, they're basically a go-between for rich Israelis and Zionists to give money to pro-Israel organizations, essentially obscuring the real source of the money. What's strange is that, according to documents, Joel Finkelstein also appears to be on the board of Hetz for Israel, so he's also indirectly paying himself. An older version of the NCRI website's About page also showed that NCRI has ties to the Charles Koch Foundation, who Adam Sohn worked for, and George Soros' Open Society Foundation. But if all that's not enough, here are Joel Finkelstein and Adam Sohn being summoned to the Israeli parliament to report their finding to Israeli legislators. They spoke to the Israel-American Jewry Relations Caucus, which is an entire caucus in the Israeli parliament dedicated to coordinating activities between Israel and Jews in America. So there you have it. The group that's accusing us of being foreign funded is working for a foreign government. It's no surprise that they're freaking out because recent surveys show that support for Israel has collapsed in the US and huge numbers of people now support Palestine. So it should really come as no surprise that they're smearing the movement and the media outlets that tell the truth.
Breakthrough.
President Donald Trump has decided to make the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., a police state. Welcome to the Socialist Program. I'm your host, Brian Becker. We are excited to have Professor Richard Wolff join us again for our regular weekly segment where we talk about the biggest stories related to the economy, the state of the working class, and the crimes of big business. Richard Wolff is the co-founder of the organization Democracy at Work. He's the author of many books, including Understanding Capitalism, which is available at democracyatwork.info. Richard Wolff, thank you so much for joining us once again for our regular segment. Here you have the President of the United States deciding to make the nation's capital a police state, all in the name of fighting crime. I want to get your take.
Well, you know, it is a sad milestone. It is not something new. It's not something different. I wish it were. It is a much more dramatic step along the road to, dare I say it, a fascistic system of society. I mean, Mr. Trump has justified many of the really terrible things he has done as a human being on the grounds of the risk of crime. The whole campaign against immigrants has been premised on a notion of crime that the FBI's own statistics undercut. It is well known, for example, in the United States and in most other countries, that crimes are less committed by immigrant communities than by the native-born communities. And the reason for that is very simple. If you're an immigrant, especially one without adequate papers, an arrest is tantamount to being deported. In other words, whatever the punishments are for the crime regularly, you get the additional punishment of being thrown out of the house you live in, out of the relationships you're in. You know, it's awful. And therefore, there's less crime among those folks because they know they have to steer clear of the whole quote-unquote criminal justice system. And that's been true in Europe. It's true here. But he went ahead and said it anyway. And the newspapers parroted it, at best sometimes saying, oh, by the way, the government statistics do not bear out the notion that this is a particularly criminal population. And immediately the government statistics that were brought out in this case indicate that the rate of crime in Washington has been diminishing over recent years, not increasing over recent years. And therefore, there's less reason to point to crime now than there would have been before. And let's remember what he's doing. We know what the results will be. I live in Manhattan. Under previous mayors, we have had particularly cleaning up Times Square. And what was the reason given? Crime. And here's the results. Do the people that are hassled, who are either arrested for a while, or then since you can't hold them, they haven't done anything, they're homeless in the downtown area, or, what do you do? You move them. That's all you've done. You've relocated these people. You haven't solved the problem if they're homeless, if they're hanging around, which is really what this is about, getting the homeless out of the vision of what you can see. So you scatter them. Here in New York, we now have people sleeping in doorways all over the city instead of being concentrated in a few areas. That's what a very expensive policy achieved, because these policies don't even make an effort, don't even make a theater piece out of trying to solve the problem. They're not bringing down the price of housing, which would make it possible for people not to be homeless. They are not bringing up the level of pay for people so they can afford the expensive. They're not solving the problems of the people they're going to be hassling. They're just hassling them, arresting them, dispersing them, relocating them, and then, in a level of hypocrisy that blows your mind, thinking they have solved the problem when they've done nothing of the sort. And here's the final point. If you actually were going to arrest large numbers of people, you know, and that's the premise, if the crime is the problem, which is phony, but if you're going to say that, then you have to follow it up with arrests, because otherwise you haven't done anything about the problem of the crime and you are exposed in that way. So we're going to arrest a lot of people and throw them in jail. Let me tell you all what you already know. Putting people in jail solves nothing. They come out of jail almost always in worse shape than they went in. Jail doesn't help them redevelop them, rebuild their personalities. It damages them because of the conditions in the jails. That's why we have a recidivism rate in this country above 70% of the people who come out of jail find their way back in. You know what the sign of a declining society is? That when it can't handle the problems in the city, it can't find a solution. It finds make-believe, cruel solutions that don't work and that actually make the problem worse because the institutions don't work either. This repetition of the it doesn't work, that's your clue that what we got here beyond the fascistic move by a megalomaniac president, what we also have is a display of layered failures that solve nothing.
Richard, there's several parts to this story, and you've touched on them. One is sort of trying to get the homeless out of the vision of the public. Donald Trump has made a big case about that. There's another part to the story, which you're also getting at, which is the fascistic or police state-like character of the move. Members of the DC National Guard have been called up. These are people who go to work every day. Now they're not going to go to work. They're on duty. They're going to be used as auxiliary police forces in the District of Columbia, in the nation's capital, in working class neighborhoods, not just about homeless encampments. There's a lot of discontent that we're hearing about from guardsmen and guardswomen who are upset that they're being used like this, sort of as a pawn. The Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, a leading civil rights, constitutional rights law firm in the District of Columbia, in Washington, D.C., wrote this statement about Trump's announcement on Monday. Donald Trump has created the fiction of an emergency to turn the nation's capital into a prototype of a police state. This is intended as a model application. No American city is safe from being placed under federal militarized rule. The federal takeover of the District of Columbia Police Department is an unlawful abuse of federal authority outside the conditions required for the invocation of Section 740 of the Home Rule Act or for the deployment of the National Guard. And then they go on. This is a first step in Trump's march to militarize American cities and destroy and subvert democracy. Now, I want to ask you about this because that's the other side of it. One is it's trying to actually just do a cosmetic, get the homeless out of public view. Like, in other words, move the homeless somewhere else, get rid of those 70 encampments that are emblematic of the problem of homelessness in the nation's capital. But the other part is the precedent that's being set. And there are many, I would say, civil libertarian groups, constitutional rights groups, are making the argument that this is an aggregation of executive power. And we know from 2020, when after George Floyd was murdered and the protests rocked America, Trump wanted to deploy the military to U.S. cities. He was insisting on it when the rebellion became even more widespread. 35 million people went into the streets. Anyway, how serious, outside of the obvious sort of BS character of this move, the part that you sort of emphasized, how big of a deal is it from your point of view that the federal government is trying to militarize American cities under this pretext of fighting crime?
Well, here's how I understand it. I hold the liberal establishment of this country, and by that I mean the Democratic Party leadership alongside the Republican Party leadership for most of the last 70 years, responsible. They are the ones who wrote or amended the laws that enable or excuse what the president is doing. And I know why they did it, because they told us as they were doing it, why they were doing it. They had been traumatized by what happened in the 1930s, that a coalition arose of communists, socialists, the CIO, that really pushed American politics to the left. That's when we created Social Security, unemployment compensation, a federal jobs program, the first minimum wage. I mean, take a look at it. We did things in 5 years that the country hadn't been able to do before that in 150. So it was a move to the left. They were traumatized, and they wanted to make sure, here comes the irony, that they would put into place the institutions and the laws to make sure that the future presidents could prevent anything like that coming. Now, let me translate. To prevent anyone on the left mounting the kind of program that they could ascribe to the Soviet Union or something like that. And there's a fantastic irony that the people making use of all those laws are not the extreme left in America, it's the extreme right. And they're doing it, let's remember, the extreme right, when they had a progressive president like Roosevelt, developed an immense passion for local rights, states' rights, cities' rights, the local. What are they doing now? Running roughshod across states' rights, city. Well, they don't care about any of that. Now that they have the president and the Supreme Court, they're going to use all of that power that was intended to block the left to destroy not just the left, but the middle, in order to create a theocratic, right-wing, you know, free market loony bin and wait for it to implode, which it will, because we've seen this movie before. So this is the rehab. That's what we're watching. So yeah, it is carrying out, you know, Project 2025, exactly this kind of realignment of social forces. They don't have the courage to talk about fascism yet, although it's coming. They will advocate it or some metaphor that will stand in for it. But it is remarkable to all local democratically elected officers are pushed aside so that the person who was never elected to run the city of Washington, D.C. can do it. And it has all the overtones that we are now smart enough to see, the racial dimension. The poor are disproportionately black in Washington, D.C. Everyone who's ever been there knows that. And the proportion of blacks in the military being brought in is much smaller than what it is in the community that they will be oppressing. All of that is going on. You can see the pandering. You know, for other people, it will be seen as making Washington white again. And that metaphor is a truism about what this is all for. These are steps in moving in that direction. And they have to now be dramatic steps because the failures of the Trump program are beginning to intrude upon the popular awareness. When he fired an absurd dramatic act, he fires the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics because he doesn't like the bad numbers about jobs that came out about April, May, and June. Right, this is the kind of, he's now doing another dramatic takeover. Is there an urgency? No. Is there an emergency in Washington? No. Is there, you know, drama in the streets? No. He's doing this in part to distract from where he's failing. He didn't end the war in Ukraine and has no prospect at this point of doing it. He didn't solve the problems in Gaza. And he didn't solve the economic problems. The wages are not going up, and the prices of the what we pay for our basics are not going down. And these are all things he said would happen, you know, on day one of my new administration. We are now 7 months, and he's not got it. That's part of what's going on here. And we shouldn't be distracted. On the other hand, you're right to bring it up because it is another sad milestone on this drive to make America great again, which looks an awful lot like making the employers absolute ruler of the workplace, making white people dominate over non-white people, natives over immigrants. Look at it. It's a tableau, and it's being finished as we speak.
Very important points, Richard. You know, I'm looking at the New York Times article about this story about federalizing the D.C. police force, sending the National Guard to take over D.C. Now, D.C. is the population there. I've lived in Washington for a long time. One, it's a bigger population than either Vermont or Wyoming. And yet Washington, D.C. is not a state. And it was a majority black city. And if it had become a state, which was the demand of the residents in D.C., because there's no voting member from D.C. in the House of Representatives, there's a non-voting member in the House. That was a reform, but again, someone who doesn't have the vote, no U.S. senator from the District of Columbia. It would have been basically an African-American-led state. Now the population through gentrification has become less than 50% African-American, but it's still a very, very large black population. Donald Trump is a racist. I mean, make America great again, as you're pointing out, is in his mind, and I think in the minds of some of his supporters, make America basically 100% white ruled again, meaning going back to the pre-1960s or 1950s before the Civil Rights Revolution changed America, and it really did change America. In 1973, Trump opened up a $100 million countersuit against the Justice Department for defamation after the federal government in 1973 sued the Trump management here in New York City for discriminating against black people. In 1989, he bought newspaper advertisements calling for the execution of the Central Park Five teenagers who were wrongly accused of criminal acts in Central Park. They were later exonerated and released from prison. He put out, with his own money, a full-page ad calling for their death penalty. There is this dominant element of racism, barely disguised, that really is leading the Trump administration to do all of this. And yet, as you pointed out, the Democratic Party, the leadership of the so-called liberal wing of the American ruling class, they're not explicitly pushing back on any of that. They're kind of whining about it, but not really mounting a significant opposition. Anyway, I'll give you the final word.
Yeah, I think you're sadly right about that. I don't understand, as well as I wish I did, how it is possible for them to do this. I've always understood that an under message, if you like, below the surface, is an unchanged racism that runs back into slavery and all of that. Most Americans know that. If you go south, you see it pretty quick. It's a whole different way of people interacting. But I'm struck by how easy it has seemed to be to, even in the formalities of public life. I mean, 2 weeks ago, we were all regaled. I think you saw it as well as I did, by the decision of the Secretary of the Defense to reconstruct a statue, I believe in Washington or in Virginia perhaps, of a Confederate general that had been torn down in that time when a lot of those statues were torn down. That is, it's pure symbolism, but look at what it is a symbol. There are people who still want to celebrate the effort of half the country to destroy the Union in order to preserve slavery. I mean, it's what are you saying? What a bizarre way of holding on to not what is best about the country, but what is worst about it. I mean, slavery is a horror and is so recognized in almost every established religion and everything else. What is going on? The holding on to that is the ability of the people who run this society the capitalist employer class, in my view, which is too small to control a big country, needs allies among the mass of working people and will stop at nothing when it comes to what the basis of that. So if there's a part of the people that are upset by their circumstance in a way that you can capture by talking about making America great again, of course you will. And if pandering to what's left of racism is a useful tool, do they worry about the long-term effects of it? Of course not. Do they worry about the social ramifications? No. It's a useful way to get a bunch of votes, or to translate. It's a useful way to take a portion of the working class and line them up so that they vote for the symbol, not understanding that that symbol, if it's elected, will keep you poor. That's the history of the country, and we're watching one particular moment in that it does it. For me, it leads me again to say, well, when the decline of the American empire got underway and we wondered how it would roil the economy underneath it, the answer is we're living through it. We are living through the disintegration, the splitting, the setting of parts of the country against one another that are the consequences of a capitalist empire that can't keep its empire anymore. That's what we're living through. And the setting of white against black is as predictable for a country like ours as any other of the splits that we are going to be seeing more and more of. The regional splits, the places where economics are okay, the top 20% versus the other 80%, all of that is cracking and separating. And you know, we will be, if I'm not wrong, and I may be, of course, but if I'm not wrong, we will be talking about the internal disintegration of this country a lot in the months ahead.
Richard Wolff is the co-founder of the organization Democracy at Work. He's the author of many books, including Understanding Capitalism, which is available at democracyatwork.info. You're listening to The Socialist Program.
Breakthrough.
We're going to take a quick break here on Breakthrough Radio, but we'll be right back. To Breakthrough Radio, the best of breakthrough news brought to you for 1 hour each week. I'm Sean Blackman.
People all over the world are marching to stand with Gaza. I'm Leanne Sima Fullihan, here with Brian Becker, and this is In the News.
Nonstop efforts by the Netanyahu government to basically destroy the will of the Palestinian people to remain. That's what's really going on. Starvation, killing people at food aid centers, killing journalists, trying to make it feel for the Palestinians, you can't win, you can't survive, you have no choice but to leave. And yet we have this incredible resilience on the part of the people. And also, and I want to ask you about what's actually going on, but around the world, including today, our show is coming out today, August 16th, tens of thousands of people are going to be in the streets right here in New York City where we're recording. But all around the world, people are standing with Gaza. But let's talk about, one, what's going on in Gaza, and two, the movement of people to stand with Palestine.
Well, in the past week or so, the Israeli genocidal project has taken a more extreme pitch against the people of Gaza, and it's happening on multiple fronts. Just last week, the whole world witnessed the assassination of the five Al Jazeera journalists. Anas al-Sharif was the main correspondent that people knew. This was a targeted killing. They were in their media tent right outside of Ashifa Hospital. They were reporting on the conditions at the hospital. Anas al-Sharif was the target of threats, public threats. The Israeli Defense Forces spokesperson was on Twitter publicly threatening to kill Anas Sharif for weeks, months actually. So everyone watched this happen. It was very clearly a targeted assassination. They did this right before they had just announced that they wanted to start the full military conquest of Gaza, basically saying there's no more political solution on the table, that now the solution will be that Israel will take over all of Gaza and they're going to start by invading Gaza City.
There was a placard somebody was sharing on social media, which is the only reason you target journalists is to hide the truth. That's actually what's going on. So many journalists have been killed.
I mean, 237 is the official count right now. 237 journalists have been killed in the past 22 months of this iteration of the genocide against the people of Palestine. And these journalists were killed very clearly to clear the way for them to begin ground operations in Gaza City. Gaza City, Brian, is where 800,000, at least 800,000 people are taking shelter because the bombardments everywhere else in the Gaza Strip have been just too brutal. And on top of that, that's where people estimate where a lot of the Israelis being held captive are also in Gaza City. So Israel is making this decision now. They've avoided until now a full razing of Gaza City. They completely destroyed, 100% destroyed all the buildings in Jabalia refugee camp, for example. They've destroyed 100% of the homes in Beit Hanun. They destroyed 90% of the homes in Beit Lahia, 70% of another neighborhood called Al-Tufah, which is east of Gaza City. I can keep going. Gaza City, it was actually less. It was so far 30% of the homes were completely destroyed, 60% were partially destroyed, and people had already started rebuilding. So people were taking shelter in Gaza City. As we speak, ground operations have begun. They killed the journalists in order to turn off the lights. And then they're going in now with the ground operations. Estimates are that it could take up to 1 year to completely take control of Gaza City.
When you say turn off the lights, you're speaking metaphorically,
yes.
Meaning to make it impossible for the world to see because the lights metaphorically are out if the journalists are killed. And I just want to stay with the journalist issue for one more second. There are really no international journalists, as far as I know, in Gaza. It's only these Palestinian journalists who, in the face of constant death threats from the Israelis for continuing to do their job, that's how we actually are learning about Gaza. So it's not international journalists. These Palestinian journalists, I mean, you can't get more heroic than what they're doing.
No, I mean, these journalists are getting direct threats every moment. All their colleagues have been killed. Al Jazeera has been banned from operating anywhere in occupied Palestine, not just in Gaza. Israel has been going against journalists for a long time, not even just this iteration of the genocide. They've destroyed the AP building since before 2023. The Press Fest has become a symbol because the Press Fest in many ways is symbolic. It doesn't actually protect people from the line of fire. You know, people say journalists should not be targeted. The Press Fest is supposed to identify them. In Gaza, it doesn't. It actually makes you a target, yet people continue to do their job. Anas al-Sharif was offered multiple times to leave Gaza and bring his family and be safe somewhere else, and he refused. He said, I'm going to continue telling the truth of what is happening. I'm going to report on my own genocide as it is happening until I die. That was his decision. He is a hero of the Palestinian people. There's no other way to understand it.
The Committee to Protect Journalists, the CPJ, says killing journalists is 100% a war crime. That's according to the regional director. I mean, there is international law. It's routinely, you know, violated, especially by the United States, especially by Israel. But killing journalists who are there with a press vest, that's a war crime. That's a crime against humanity. At the demonstration that's going to be happening later today, August 16th, here in New York City, there are many contingents. One of them is a press or journalist contingent. And I think they're creating this giant vest, sort of as a symbol of the fact that the press vest, which is supposed to be a shield, a way of protecting people reporting, is in fact becoming sort of a target for the Israeli war criminals.
There is going to be a journalist contingent after this wave of assassinations of journalists, after this episode. Again, it's not new, but this episode came in the midst of this starvation and it unleashed a new wave of outrage, even among even journalists who in many ways are not progressive on Palestine, that haven't really spoken up about Palestine before. Now they can't take it anymore and they're making comments. Clarissa Ward, of all people, the chief international correspondent for CNN, who's been providing cover for the genocide for the past year and a half. I mean, she's been helping manufacture false stories about, you know, Israel feeling unsafe, etc. She came out and she said, I know these journalists. I've worked with them. They were doing their job. This is a war crime. And she even indicated that the entire genocide needed to be stopped. I mean, this is, of course, we're not looking to CNN for moral clarity, but to see the shift that's happening among some of these public figures who until now have not shifted. I mean, this is actually showing a new wave of transformation among public opinion across the world.
Yeah, the Clarissa Ward social media post was very interesting because I think you're right. It represents a break within the ruling class. I mean, Clarissa Ward is not a capitalist, she's a reporter. But if one thinks of ruling class politics, especially in the United States, but you could apply it to almost any ruling class anywhere in the world, the media is actually an arm, not officially in the case of the United States, where it might be in other places where the state-owned media is officially the arm of the ruling class government. The U.S. maintains the fiction of a free press because it's independently owned, meaning owned by billionaires, owned by corporations. So it's, quote, free, not government. But mainly really represents the U.S. government lying. You never see, for instance, a story in the U.S. media that says, maybe Hamas is right. Or, you know, during right in the run-up to the Iraq war, you never saw a U.S. media story that said, you know, maybe Saddam Hussein is telling the truth that Iraq doesn't have weapons of mass destruction. You don't see stories like that. So yes, the media is an echo chamber of the ruling class. And thus Clarissa Ward and CNN, let's consider them actually part of the ruling class. What does her social media post mean and how far does it go? I think this is an interesting question. I believe it shows that there is a fracturing within the ruling class of the previous, like, undiluted support for the state of Israel. I think the dam is starting to break. It hasn't broken, but it's starting to break. And I think her comments are emblematic of it. It reminds me of during the Vietnam War when the media started to give favorable coverage to the anti-war movement or to the arguments of the anti-war movement. That started really in 1968 after the Tet Offensive proved to a section of the U.S. ruling class that the U.S. was never going to win the war in Vietnam. So one section of the ruling class said, hey, we're not going to win. Let's cut our losses. Let's leave. And then media coverage changed, and that was important. But there's another side to the story, which is the people on the ground, including well-known influencers and journalists in Gaza, have been confronting Clarissa Ward in the past about her, as you put it, being sort of part of the Israeli propaganda machine, sort of facilitating the lies. There were some dramatic confrontations between people on the ground in Gaza challenging her about her coverage. And now some of those same people are making the argument that Clarissa Ward should go on TV, not just on her social media, to say the same things. Like, if you've had this now revelation, if you are now like horrified, mortified about the assassination of these journalists, go on TV and say it. Now, of course, if Clarissa Ward does say it on CNN Live, Clarissa Ward knows that will be the end of her career because in spite of the fact that it's called a free press, it's actually not free.
Breakthrough. The U.S. and South Korea are preparing for joint war drills as part of the escalation against China. Meanwhile, a recent Atlantic Council report advises the U.S. to prepare for nuclear war with North Korea and China at the same time. We'll discuss this and more on this week's China Report. Welcome to the China Report, made in collaboration with Pivot to Peace. Every week, we'll be helping you sort through the propaganda with an independent view of the country that we're taught to hate, but know so little about. I'm your host, Amanda Yi. These are this week's headlines. A Chinese ICE detainee has died by suicide at a Pennsylvania detention center. 32-year-old Chao Fengge, originally from China, took his life last Tuesday by hanging himself, according to a release from the government and communications between first responders reviewed by The Intercept. Ge had been detained at Moshannon Valley Processing Center, an immigration jail run by private prison firm GEO Group, about 300 miles west of New York City. Ge had only been detained for 5 days before taking his own life. Moshannon is the largest ICE detention facility in the Northeast and has been...
I'm going to have to end that program there. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker. They don't necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, the Board of Directors, Station Management, or the WEFT Associates. So I'm going to play out again with the another Beatles song. So I get the CD queued up. So this is Free as a Bird from, again, The Beatles. Have a good night, and please continue listening to us here on WEFT 90.1 FM radio.
Once knew.